Well, good morning. On this next to last day of February, my name is Michael McCusker. This is the last opportunity for me on this program to acknowledge Black History Month. I started off at the beginning of the month with something I wrote, The Emancipation of Abraham Lincoln, also in celebration of his 205th birthday this month. I'd like to finish it now with Beyond Hatred, The Education of C.P. Ellis. And it's an interview by Studs Terkel from his book, American Dreams, Lost and Found, which also included an interview with our own Q.P. Zeke. Beyond Hatred. We're in his office in Durham, North Carolina. He is the business manager of Local 465 of the International Union of Operating Engineers. On the wall is a plaque, Certificate of Service in recognition to C.P. Ellis for your faithful service to the city in having served as a member of the Durham Human Relations Council, February 1977. At one time, he had been president, aka Exalted Cyclops, of the Durham chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. And C.P. Ellis. My father worked in a textile mill in Durham. He died at 48 years old, probably from cotton dust. Back then, we never heard of brown lung. I was about 17 years old and had a mother and sister depending on somebody to make a living. There was just barely enough insurance to cover his burial. I had to quit school and go to work. I was about in the eighth grade when I left school. My father worked hard but never had enough money. When I went to school, I never seemed to have adequate clothing to wear. I always left school late afternoon with a sense of inferiority. I still got some of those inferiority feelings now that I have to overcome once in a while. I loved my father. He would go with me to ball games. We'd go fishing together. I was really ashamed of the way he would dress. He would take his money and give it to me instead, outing it on himself. I always had the feeling that somebody was looking and making fun of us. My father and I were very close, but we didn't talk about too many intimate things. He did have a drinking problem. During the week, he would work every day, but weekends, he was ready to get plastered. I can understand when a guy has worked hard all week and keeps finding his bills are larger than his paycheck. Finally, you just say, to heck with it. I'll just get drunk and forget it. My father was out of work during the Depression, and I remember going with him to the finance company uptown, and he was turned down. That's something that always stuck. After several years pumping gas at a service station, I got married. We had four children. One child was born blind and retarded, which was a real additional expense to us. He has never spoken a word. He doesn't know me when I go to see him. But I see him. I hug his neck. I talk to him. Tell him I love him. All my life, I had worked, did all the overtime I could get, and still could not survive financially. I began to say there's something wrong with this country. I worked my butt off and just never seemed to break even. I had some real great ideas about this great nation. They say to abide by the law, go to church, do right and live for the Lord, and everything will work out. But it didn't work out. It just kept getting worse and worse. I was working a bread route. The highest I made one week was $75. The rent on our house was about $12 a week. So finally, I left the bread route with $50 in my pocket. I went to the bank and borrowed $4,000 to buy the service station. I worked 7 days a week, open and close, and finally had a heart attack, just about 2 months before the last payments of that loan. My wife had done the best she could to keep it running. Trying to come out of that hole, I just couldn't do it. I really began to get bitter. I didn't know who to blame. I had to hate somebody. Hating America is hard to do because you can't see it. You got to have something to look at to hate. The natural people for me to hate were black people, because my father before me was a member of the Klan. As far as he was concerned, it was the savior of white people, the only organization in the world that would take care of them. So I began to admire the Klan. I got active in the Klan while I was at the service station. Every Monday night, a group of men would come by and stand around talking and drinking Cokes. I couldn't help but wonder, why are these dudes coming out every Monday? They said they were with the Klan and had meetings close by. Would I be interested? Boy, that was an opportunity I really looked forward to be a part of something. I joined the Klan, went from member to chaplain, from chaplain to vice president, from vice president to president. The title is Exalted Cyclops. The first night I went with the fellows, they knocked on the door and gave the signal. They sent some robed Klansmen to talk to me and gave me some instructions. I was led into a large meeting room, and this was the time of my life. It was thrilling. Four robed Klansmen led me into the hall. The lights were dim, and the only thing you could see was an illuminated cross. I knelt before it and made certain vows. We promised to uphold the purity of the white race, fight communism, and protect white womanhood. After I'd taken my oath, there was loud applause going throughout the building. Must have been at least 400 people there for this little old C.P. Ellis. It disturbs me when people who do not really know what it's all about are so very critical of Klansmen. The majority of them are low-income whites, people who really don't have a part in something. They have been shut out as well as the blacks. Some are not very well educated either, just like myself. We had a lot of support from doctors, lawyers, and police officers. Maybe they've had bitter experiences in this life, and they had to hate somebody. So the natural person to hate would be the black person. He's beginning to come up. He's beginning to learn to read and start voting and run for political office. Here are white people who are supposed to be superior to them, and we're shut out. At one time, I was state organizer for the National Rights Party. I organized a youth group for the Klan. I felt we were getting old and our generation's going to die. So I contacted certain kids in schools. They were having racial problems. On the first night, we had 100 high school students. When they came in the door, we had Dixie playing. These kids were just thrilled to death. I began to hold weekly meetings, teaching them the principles of the Klan. At that time, I believe Martin Luther King had communist connections. I began to teach that Andy Young was affiliated with the Communist Party. I had a call one night from one of our kids. He said, "I'd just been robbed downtown by two black guys." I had a couple of drinks, and that really teed me off. I went downtown and couldn't find the kid. I got worried. I saw two young black people. I had a .32 revolver with me. I said, "You seen a little white boy up here? I just got a call from him and was told some blacks robbed him of 15 cents. I pulled my pistol out and put it right in his head, put right at his head. I said, "I've always wanted to kill a black, and I think I'll make you the first one." I nearly scared the kid to death, and he struck off. This was the time when the civil rights movement was really beginning to peak. The blacks were beginning to demonstrate and picket downtown stores. I never will forget some black lady I hated with a purple passion, Ann Atwater. Every time I'd go downtown, she'd be leading a boycott. Big, fat, heavy woman. She'd pulled about 8 demonstrations, and the first thing you know, they had 2, 3 blacks at the checkout counter. Her and I have had some pretty close confrontations. I felt very big. We had been more or less a secret organization. We didn't want anybody to know who we were, but I began to do some thinking. What am I hiding for? Why can't I go to the city council meeting and say, "We don't want you to purchase mobile units to set in our schoolyards. We don't want black kids in our schools." We began to come out in the open. We would go to the meetings, and the blacks would be there, and we'd be there. It was a confrontation every time. I didn't hold back anything. We began to make some inroads with the city councilmen and county commissioners. They began to call us friend. They didn't want integration either, but they couldn't stand up and say it openly. We visited some of the city leaders in their homes and talked to them privately. It wasn't long before councilmen would call me up. The blacks are coming up tonight and making outrageous demands. How about some of you people showing up and having a little balance? I'd get on the telephone. We'd load up our cars, and we'd fill up half the council chamber, and the blacks the other half. During these times, I carried weapons to the meetings, outside my belt. We would wind up just hollering and fussing at each other. As a result, the city council still had their way. They didn't want to give up control of the blacks, nor the Klan. They were using us. I began to realize this later on down the road. One day I was walking downtown and a certain city council member saw me coming. I expected him to shake my hand because he was talking to me at night on the telephone. I had been in his home and visited with him. He crossed the street. Something's wrong here, I began to think. Most of them were merchants or maybe an attorney, an insurance agent, people like that. As long as they keep us low-income whites and low-income blacks fighting, they're going to maintain control. So I decided, you're not going to use me anymore. That's when I began to do some real serious thinking. The same thing is still happening in this country today. People are being used by those in control, those who have all the wealth. I'm not espousing communism. We've got the greatest system of government in the world, but those who have it simply don't want those who don't have it to have any part of it. Black and white. When it comes to money, the green, other colors make no difference. I spent a lot of sleepless nights. I still didn't like blacks or Jews or Catholics. My father said, don't have anything to do with them. I didn't until I met a black person and talked with him, eyeball to eyeball. I met a Jewish person and talked with him, eyeball to eyeball. I found out they're just people like me. They cried, they cussed, they prayed, just like myself. After a long time, I got to the point where I could look past labels, but at that time, my mind was closed. I'd have to go home at night, and I'd have to wrestle with myself. I'd look at a black person walking down the street, and the guy'd have ragged shoes or his clothes would be worn. That began to do something inside me. I went through this for about 6 months. I felt I just had to get out of the Klan, but I didn't. Then something happened. The state AFL-CIO received a $78,000 grant from the Department of Hugh to investigate its health, education, and welfare, to investigate how to solve racial problems in the school system. I got a telephone call from the president of the AFL-CIO. We'd like to get some people together from all walks of life. I said, all walks of life? Who are you talking about? He said, blacks, whites, liberals, conservatives, Klansmen, NAAC people. I said, no way am I coming with all those blacks. But a white citizens council guy said, let's go up there and see what's going on. It's tax money being spent. I walked in the door, and there was a large number of blacks and white liberals. I knew most of them by face. Ann Atwater was there. I just forced myself to go and sit down. The meeting was moderated by a great big black guy who said, I want you all to feel free to say anything you want to say. Some of the blacks stood up and said, it's white racism. I took all I could take. I asked for the floor and I cut loose. No, sir, it's black racism. If we didn't have the black kids in the schools, we wouldn't have the problems we have today. I will never forget. Howard Clements, a black guy, stood up and said, I'm glad C.P. Ellis came because he's the most honest man here tonight. And at the end of the meeting, some blacks tried to come and shake my hand, but I wouldn't do it. I walked off. Second night, same group was there. I felt a little more easy because I got some things off my chest. The third night, they wanted to elect a chairman. Howard Clements stood up and said, I suggest we elect two co-chairpersons. Joe Becton, executive director of the Human Relations Commission, just as black as he can be, he nominated me. This There was a reaction among some blacks. No. And then of all things, they nominated Ann Atwater, that big old fat gal, as co-chairman. I thought to myself, hell, ain't no way I can work with that gal. Finally, I agreed to accept it, because at this point, I was tired of fighting. A Klansman and a militant black woman, co-chairman of the school committee. How could I work with her? But after about 2 or 3 days, it was in our hands. We had to make it a success. This gave me another sense of belonging, a sense of pride. It helped this inferiority feeling I had. Here's a chance for a low-income white man to be something. I accepted the job. Her and I began to reluctantly work together. She had as many problems working with me as I had working with her. One night I called her. Ann, you and I should have a lot of differences, and we got them now. But there's something laid out here before us, and if it's going to be a success, you and I are going to have to make it one. Can we lay aside some of those feelings? She said, I'm willing if you are. My old friends would call me at night. CP, what the hell is wrong with you? You're selling out the white race. This began to make me have guilt feelings. Am I doing right? Am I doing wrong? Here I am all of a sudden making an about-face and trying to deal with my feelings, my heart. My mind was beginning to open up. I was beginning to see what was right and what was wrong. We were going to go talking together for 10 nights. By this time, I had gone to work at Duke University in maintenance, making very little money. Terry Sanford gave me this 10 days off with pay. He was president of Duke at the time. He knew I was a Klansman and realized the importance of blacks and whites getting along. I said, if we're going to make this work, I got to get my kind of people, the low-income whites. We walked the streets of Durham, and we knocked on doors and invited people. Ann was going into the black community. They just wasn't responding to us when we made those house calls. Some of them were cussing us out. You're selling us out, Ellis. Get out of my door. Ann was getting the same response from blacks. One day, Ann and I went back to the school and we sat down. We began to talk and just reflect. Ann said, my daughter came home crying every day. She said her teacher was making fun of me in front of the other kids. I said, boy, the same thing happened to my kid. White liberal teacher was making fun of Tim Ellis's father, the Klansman. He came home crying. At this point, I began to see, here we are, two people from the far ends of the fence, having identical problems, except her being black and me being white. From that moment on, I tell you, that gal and I worked together good. I began to love the girl, really. We worked with the people who came to the meetings. They talked about racism, sex education, about teachers not being qualified. After 7, 8 nights of real intense discussion, these people who'd never talked to each other before all of a sudden came up with resolutions. It was really something. You had to be there to get the tone and feeling of it. At this point, I didn't like integration. But the law says you do this, and I've got to do what the law says, okay? We said, let's take these resolutions to the school board. The most disheartening thing I faced was the school system refusing to implement any one of them. These were recommendations from the people who pay taxes and pay their salaries. So when the school board refused, I decided I'd just run for the school board. I spent $85 on the campaign. The guy running against me spent several thousand. I really had nobody on my side. The Klan turned against me. The low-income whites turned against me. The liberals didn't particularly like me. The blacks were suspicious of a Klansman. But I made up my mind that what I was doing was right, and I was going to do it regardless of what anybody said. It bothered me when people would call and worry my wife. She's always supported me in anything I wanted to do. She was changing, and my boys were too. I got some of my youth corps kids involved. They still followed me. I was invited to the Democratic Women's Social Hour as a candidate. Didn't have but one suit to my name. Had it 6 years, 7, 8 years. I had it cleaned, put on the best shirt I had, and a tie. Here was all these high-class, wealthy candidates shaking hands. I walked up to the mayor and stuck out my hand. He said, CP, I'm glad to see you. But I could tell by that rag-type handshake he was lying to me. I know they were saying, "What's this little old dude running for school board?" Yet they had to smile and make like they're glad to see me. I began to spot some black people in that room. I automatically went to them, and that was a firm handshake. They'd say, "I'm glad to see you, CP," and I knew they meant it. Every place I appeared, I said, "I will listen to the voice of the people. I won't make a major decision until I first contact all the organizations in the city." I got 4,640 votes. The guy beat me by 2,000. Not bad for $85 and no constituency. The whole world was opening up, and I was learning new truths that I never learned before. I was beginning to look at a black person, shake hands with him, and see him as a human being. It was almost like being born again. I didn't have these sleepless nights I used to have when I was active in the Klan and slipping around at night. I could sleep at night and feel good about it. I'd rather live now than at any other time in history. It's a challenge. Back at Duke, doing maintenance, I'd pick up my tools, fix the commode, unstop the drains. But this got in my blood. Things weren't right in this country, and what we did in Durham needs to be told. I was so miserable at Duke, I could hardly stand it. I'd get up and go to work every morning just hating to go. My whole life had changed. I got an eighth grade education, and I wanted to complete high school. I went to high school in the afternoons on a program called PEP, Past Employment Progress. I was about the only white in class and the oldest. I began to read about biology. I'd take my books home at night because I was determined to get through. Sure enough, I graduated. I got the diploma at home, and I got another job. I came to work one morning, and some guy says, "We need a union." At this time, I wasn't pro-union. My daddy was anti-labor, too. "We're not getting paid much. We're having to work 7 days in a row. We're all starving to death." The next day, I met with the international representative of the operating engineers. He gave me authorization cards. "Get these cards out, and we'll have an election." There were 88 for the union and 17 no's. I was elected chief steward for the local. Shortly after, a union man came down from Charlotte and says we need a full-time rep. "We've only got 200 people at the two plants here. There's just barely enough money coming in to pay your salary. You'll have to get and organize unions. But I know how to stir people up. That's how I got to be business agent for the local." When I began to organize, I began to see far deeper. I began to see people again being used, blacks against whites. Management is vicious. There's two things they want to keep, all the money and all the say-so. They don't want these poor working folks to have none of that. Hire anti-union law firms, badmouth unions. The people were making $1.95 an hour, barely able to get through weekends. I worked as a business rep for 5 years and was seeing all this. I ran for business manager of our local. He's elected by the workers. The guy that ran against me was black, and our membership is 75% black. I thought, "Claiborne, there's no way you can beat the black guy." But I beat him 4-1. The company used my past against me. They put out letters with a picture of a robe and a cap. "Would you vote for a Klansman?" They wouldn't deal with the issues. I immediately called for a mass meeting. I said, "Okay, this is Claiborne Ellis. This is where I come from. I want you to know, you black ladies here, I was at one time a member of the Klan. I want you to know because they'll tell you about it." I invited some of my old black friends. I said, "Brother Joe, Brother Howard, be honest now and tell these people how you feel about me." Howard Clements kidded me a little bit. He said, "I don't know what I'm doing here supporting an ex-Klansman." And then he said, "I know what C.P. Ellis come from. I knew him when he was. I knew him as he grew and growed with him. I'm telling you now, follow this ex-Klansman." I won, 134-41. It makes you feel good to go into a plant and butt heads with professional union busters. You see blacks and whites join hands to defeat the racist issues they use against people. Can you imagine a guy who's got an adult high school diploma running into professional college students who are union busters? I got to compete with them. I work 7 days a week, nights and on Saturday and Sunday. The salary's not that great, and if I didn't care, I'd quit. But I care, and I can't quit. I got a taste of it. I tell people there's a tremendous possibility in this country to stop the wars, the struggles, the fights between people. People say, that's an impossible dream. You sound like Martin Luther King, an ex-Klansman who sounds like Martin Luther King. I don't think it's an impossible dream. It's happened in my life. It's happened in other people's lives in America. I don't know what's ahead of me. I have no desire to be a big union official. I want to be right out there in the field with the workers. I want to walk through their factory and shake hands with that man whose hands are dirty. I'm going to do all that one little old man can do, and I ain't got that many years left, but I want to make the best of them. Back in 1968, when the news came over the radio that Martin Luther King was assassinated, I got on the telephone and began to call other Klansmen. We just had a real party at the service station, really rejoicing because that troublemaker was dead. Our troubles were over. They say the older you get, the harder it is for you to change. That's not necessarily true. Since I've changed, I've sat down and listened to tapes of Martin Luther King. I listen to it, and tears come to my eyes because I know what he's saying now. I know what's happening. And that was Beyond Hatred, The Education of C.P. Ellis. It's from Studs Terkel's book, American Dreams Lost and Found, from which this interview has been not only reprinted in my newspaper, but spoken on the air. And as I said earlier, the book also includes an interview with the late Bob Kupczyk, the world-famous environmentalist logger from Brownsmead, who died in 1990. His other highly acclaimed, Stud Terkel's, oral histories include Working, Division Street, America, Hard Times, The Good War, and Hope Dies Last. And also, there's a whole CD set of all his recordings with interviews with people. C.P. Ellis, who was about in his late 80s, died last year. And Studs Terkel died actually 4 days after my mother would have been 96. He died at age 96 on October 31st, 2008. My mother died earlier that year. You've been listening to A Story Told. I'm Michael McCusker.